My name is Arno van Roosmalen. I'm the director of Stroom Den Haag, which is a center for contemporary art and architecture in The Hague. And I'm sorry for my voice. It's a bit low, as you can hear. So please come a bit closer. Here is the entrance of this wonderful space by Jasper Nietz. It will be interesting, I promise you. Please come close and don't disappoint me. Okay, good. I've shown you a little bit of the projects that we did. It was very impressive. Impressionistic. I hope it was impressive as well. What is Stroom Den Haag? Stroom Den Haag, like I said, is a center for contemporary art and architecture in The Hague. The focus of our program is the city, which is the city of The Hague as such, but also the contemporary city. What do we want to do with the city? We think we should, from a cultural perspective, contribute to thinking about the city and to actions in the city. And why? Why would an art institution want to contribute to the city? First of all, because the city is a very complex structure. The city, the urban texture, public space, architecture should also be considered as cultural phenomena. If you don't look at them from a cultural perspective, you don't fully acknowledge the complexity and the significance of cities. And how can art contribute to thinking about the city and to actions in the city? This is because art, which starts from an autonomous position. Artists usually start from a position which is without any political interest, without any religious or ethical interest. From this autonomous position, art can give us new perspectives on the city. It can shift our framework, it can tilt our vision, it can show us the backside of the things that we think we know already. Our own environment, our own lives, our own society. And from this perspective, art can contribute to thinking about the city. Next to the economic perspective, the political, the governmental perspective. And I think if we look at cities, contemporary cities, it is also very necessary to think beyond the regular framework that we used to think about cities. It's very important to develop new visions on cities, to open up the framework and to enrich our knowledge on topics that relate to cities. Art, in a way, not only inspires but also visualizes, idealizes maybe, and allows us to dream about cities. Okay, what is the program? Please enter if you want to. We don't eat you, and we're not dangerous, although it looks like a cage. What is the program of Stroom? It consists of regular exhibitions, it consists of lectures, of debates, and it also consists of art projects, temporary and permanent projects in the city of The Hague. It also consists of expert meetings, workshops, etc., of a library, of occasional publications. So that is Stroom, and that is what we do. So now I was going to ask, and who are you? Who am I talking with? Are you from Madrid? And you are from Madrid as well? Do you speak English? A little bit. If I am not clear, please ask me to be clear. Are you professionals in the art world or not? No? Interested in art? Okay, good. So I will try to be clear, but please say so if I'm not. We are now at an art fair, and like a museum or a gallery, an art fair is a space is a known format, is a space where we expect art to be. It's very clear here that we see art, that we need art and artists, and that we can even buy art. Strom, the institution that I'm representing, is probably having other perspectives on art next to the aspect that we encounter here. And I think it's very important to present these perspectives. And I think it's very nice that this occasion, this program, allows us to present these perspectives, not only Strom, but also the colleague institutions. Because I think we represent another kind of value through art for society, a kind of value which is very important. And I will try to show you a little bit about this with only three projects. Basically, I would like to discuss three questions, and they are very simple. One is, what is the place of art? Here, it's very clear. It's a very concrete place. It's white walls, and there's light on it, and everything which is in there is visible as art. But art can also be everywhere. That can be panatopium, if you could say so. And therefore, it can be invisible as art, but it doesn't mean that it's not art. So that's one question. What is the place of art? The second one is, how does art appear? If we look at the fair, we see art appearing as an object. So if we look in the booth, we see objects. These are art pieces. But art can also appear as a process, or as something temporal, as architecture, or as daily life. So that's the second question. What's the appearance of art? How does art appear? The third one, and I would like to focus on that one, is what is the value of art? Here, the value of art is determined by the market. The value of art is expressed in money. But I think art can also represent other kinds of value, social values, knowledge, or a simple thing like happiness, which cannot be expressed in money, but is very important. So I take three projects to talk about these three questions. One is, like I said, the place of art. There is a quote by Chris Dergom. He is the director, current director of the Tate Modern in London, and he was my director when I was working in the Boijmans Museum in Rotterdam. And he said recently in an interview, art doesn't have its own cultural space anymore. He said, museums will become different. They will become community centers and art schools. You have to be radically different to rethink the notion of the museum, not just in its physical substance, but as a social organization. So Chris Dergom asks himself, what is the space, what is the place of culture, what is the place of art, and what is a museum, or what is a cultural institution? And according to Chris Dergom, the answer to the question, what is a museum, can be found by looking at smaller institutions like the ones that are presented here. So, this project is called the Frog Bell Project by John Knight. It was a project from 1992. Strom does a lot of art projects in public space. Usually, there's an institution that commissions art projects. So it's the government, or an embassy, or a company that asks an artist to make an art piece for public space. This project involved artists that could commission themselves the project. John Knight proposed the following. As you know, in the Netherlands, many people use bicycles. There's a bell on the bicycle to warn other people. He proposed to make a new bell which makes the sound of a frog. Why a frog? Because the emblem of The Hague, the city of The Hague, is this bird. I don't know how it's called in Spanish. Because I also don't know how it's called in English. But it eats frogs. So he developed a bell that makes the sound of a frog, and people could get this bell. He was either mounted on a bicycle. They could only get the bell if they would give away their own bicycle bells. So here you see all the traditional bicycle bells that are donated by people from The Hague. What happens with these bells? Well, there's not a country where people cycle a lot. This is Cuba. But they don't. At that time, the traffic situation for cyclists in Cuba was very dangerous. So he put the bells on transport to Cuba, so that people there could also have bicycle bells. And of course, it involves a lot of marketing and communication to be able to involve the people in The Hague, the people that were on the street, into this art project. So you can ask yourself, what is the place of art here? Is it the public space of the city? Or is it the bicycles? Or is it a place of art somewhere in between Cuba and the Netherlands? Or is it on the bicycles in Cuba? Or is the place of art maybe the minds of the people that connects them to their colleague cyclists in Cuba? I think the place of art here is less determined than, for instance, if you look around you, the place of art here in the booth. So that's one project. Now, if you allow me, I skip to the next one. You already mentioned the footprint program. Part of the program of Stroom is about food and food production in relation to the cities. This program is called Footprint. And one manifestation as part of this footprint program is called Daghap, which is Dutch for daily dish, but it's also like goodbye food. So there's a language joke. And Daghap involved a project, an area in The Hague, which is quite big, as you can see. And this is a district of the city which is going to be developed. And the city government has the ambition to make this the most sustainable city district in the world. They have written enormous, impressive plans, but the one thing that they didn't write about and they didn't think about was food. So we said to them, well, food is also a very important instrument in developing a sustainable city district. And this was the basis to develop this manifestation. So we were able to use this whole area for 1 month. This is the sketch. And this is a picture of the true situation. And the area basically involved some artistic interventions, but also a restaurant. And we called it the food factory. So the thing that the factory produced was food. But at the same time, the food created the factory. So the food was on the walls and on the roof of the factory. So you could, in a way, pick the food from the factory that produced the food. Inside was a restaurant. Another feature was an outdoor brewery. Maybe you know that in former times, the water in cities in Europe was so polluted that you had to drink beer, because beer was the only healthy drink that you could use. Harriet Wahl is a designer who developed this outdoor brewery that uses water, the local water. So we drew the water from the ditches around the area and we made beer from it, very high quality beer. And it was not just a brewery, but there was also a program where people could learn how to make beer, or amateur brewers would gather and have their exchange of knowledge. And a very important part, because you could rightly say, well, this is just a manifestation of 1 month. And in the beginning I said, we want to contribute to thinking about cities and we want to act Well, what is a manifestation of 1 month? It's nothing. So the most important aspect of this manifestation is this project by Studio Makis Bey, who are two Dutch designers. They introduced the historical concept of the Nutsvereniging, which is a Dutch word that applies to a kind of associations that developed in the 19th century by more wealthy people who wanted to raise the level of knowledge and the living level of normal or regular people. So the Nutsvereniging are, you could call them like associations for the common good. And the Makkingeer Bank said, if we want to develop this area and make it sustainable, it shouldn't only be sustainable in a physical sense, but also in a mental and a social sense. So we should make people owners of the development of this area. We should make people responsible. And how do we do it? We do this, please enter. Here is the entrance, and you can sit. And I'm not dangerous. And it's interesting, and you can walk away if you want to.
Yeah, I know. Thanks.
Don't feel obliged. So these associations, they are like groups of individual people, but also people that have that run Volkstuinders, allotment gardens, or beekeepers, or banks, or project developers. So it's individuals, companies, and institutions that gather and that become member of these associations for the common good. And they are going to develop energy, compost, and clean water. And that's the basic to develop, this is to develop a basic infrastructure for this area. And we just learned that we will have the area for 5 years. So it's not just a manifestation of a month. We will be able to develop this city district together with all those people for 5 years. And now I would like you to pay some attention to these statistics. It's about energy, but I would like you to look at the design because it's very close to this. But this is almost 100 years before. I now skip from the project of Stroom briefly to Otto Neurath. Otto Neurath is a scientist from Austria, a philosopher, economist, sociologist, and he developed visual statistics. So very complex matter, social matter, political matter, economic, financial matter, was transformed into clearly readable statistics. And Otto Neurath was very ahead, very much ahead of his time, and has been really influential over the decades. He established a museum. It's the Museum for Economy and Sociology, Gesellschaft und Wirtschaft Museum. The idea of the museum was that it's for the common man. Now we don't talk about the common man anymore, but in those times we talked about the common man. Why did he start this museum? He had a very clear purpose. He said, and consider it to be the 1920s, 1930s, life is very complex and people the lives of people are being formed by processes and powers that are far too abstract to be able to understand for people. So he said, I'm going to try to visualize these abstract processes and these abstract powers in order to inform people, in order to create a critical consciousness, and eventually in order for people to get a grip on their lives and to be active citizens, and to maybe even have an influence on what's happening to their own lives. So these are some, I think they're also beautiful examples of the statistics. Before I talked about the place of art and the place of the museum, and I talked about this quote of Chris Derkom. Well, this museum of Otto Neurath didn't have its own building. It used to take place in this case, this is a poster from the City Hall of Vienna. It would be in post offices, It would be in empty shops, in shopping streets. It could be anywhere. Why? Because that's the places where the people would, in their daily life, be able to encounter this museum. And he made a mobile structure that could be set up anywhere. This museum is not—it's not an art museum. There's a sociology and economy museum. It's not an art museum. But he was Otto Neurath was very much aware of the importance of artists and designers. So he said, if I want to communicate clearly with people, I need people that know about visual language and that are able to visualize very complex material. So that's why I think it's legitimate to bring up Otto Neurath. And for me and for the program of Strom, he is really a key figure. So, if we talk about the appearance of art, then we can say that art can, like in our manifestation, can appear anywhere. It can appear as the development of a city district. It can appear as a process that will last for years and years, through which we try to improve our environment. So it can also, in a way, dissolve into society, which makes it less visible as art, of course. Now I switch to the third question. That question was, what is the value of art, or how can art express value? Well, like I said, here on a fair like this, it's very clear. The value of art is defined by the market and is expressed in monetary terms. Strom has, maybe we can show the short video now, if I have time. Just play it, if possible.
Dus tijd. Mensen zeggen vaak dat tijd kostbaar is. Of relatief zeggen ze ook. En tijd is geld natuurlijk. Onzin, wegwezen. Tijd is gewoon tijd.
Ja, mevrouwtje. Daar hebben ze nu de timebank. Je verkoopt je eigen tijd, waarmee je weer tijd van iemand anders terug kunt kopen. Huh? Voorbeeld. Corina is lid van timebank en kan een mooie tekst schrijven. Corina, mooie tekst. Hé, wacht eens, iemand zoekt een mooie tekst voor een website. Nou, dat kan Corina wel. Tik, 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 af. Kostte een uurtje, dus een uurtje verdiend. En nu? Een uurtje van iemand anders terugkopen. Ah, Leo kan goed fietsen maken. Dat komt goed uit, want de fiets van Corina is helemaal naar de galerie. Dus Leo, doe wat je zo goed kan. Doe ook eens iets nuttigs met je tijd en word lid van de Timebank, want...
Dat is gewoon tijd, idioot, hè?
Klaar. We started with another program, which is called upcycling. And upcycling is a notion which derives from the cradle-to-cradle theory, or the idea of cradle-to-cradle. And upcycling is basically, it's referring to recycling. And recycling is, if this is empty, I'll throw it away, and someone else can make another plastic thing out of it. But usually, the value of the recycled thing is less. The notion of upcycling is that you enhance or enlarge the value through recycling or through looking at things in a different way. And this is what this project Upcycling is about. And we thought that it would be a good idea in the framework of upcycling to connect to the time bank. And maybe some of you know, it's a bit cracking, it's not my voice, but maybe some of you know about time bank. Time bank, as you could see in the film, is a bank that is trading with time as value. So not with money, but time. It was developed, this time bank, by Anton Fidokle and Julieta Aranda, who also run Eflux in New York. And we established the Dutch branch of the time bank. And I'll show you a few images. Basically, like I said, but I just telling you basically it's a bank that uses time as a value. So if I can do something like writing a text, like you could see in the film, I can valorize the text in time, and for that amount of time, I can ask someone to do something else. So it's not direct exchange, but it's close to bartering exchange systems. To make this visible, we started a time store at Stroom. This is the facade of Stroom, where you can buy products for time. So here you see there's some honey. There is a bicycle repair kit, which is funny because the first issue was about bikes. The time bank is organizing a lot of live sessions where people are introduced into time banking and also can exchange their expertise, and sometimes there's a match. This was part of a live session that we did at FAST, which is a surfer village in The Hague. There have been live sessions with Occupy Amsterdam in The Hague, but also with expat organizations, companies, etc., etc. Now, I have a guest here, which is a colleague of mine, who is Sara Pape García, and she is coordinating the time bank at Stroop. She speaks fluently Spanish, and she is in Madrid also to do some research on time banks that have been developed here in Madrid. So we thought it would be nice maybe if Sara could explain a little bit more about time bank, and maybe also to talk a little bit about the relation between our time bank and the common time banks. So, if I give the mic to you, is that okay?
Hello. Shall I change it to Spanish or English is okay? Spanish? Yeah?
Okay.
You too. Okay. Let's do it in Spanish, yeah? ¿Sabéis algo del banco del tiempo? Efectivamente, sí. Y bueno, nosotros tenemos un banco de tiempo en Holanda y, como dijo Arno antes, hacemos intercambios entre gente con sus servicios en vez de con dinero, con tiempo. Y el sector cultural pues necesitaba ese espacio porque ya hay muchos servicios que no se pueden comprar ya con dinero y tiempo tienen muchísimo. Vosotros también trabajáis. Entonces, también me preguntaba, ¿qué opináis vosotros, por ejemplo, de implementar un banco de tiempo en el sector cultural? ¿También lo vería posible aquí en Madrid?
Como que sí, yo en el sector cultural me muevo más en el tema social. Yo trabajo en el área de familia y servicios sociales. Y nosotros tenemos un banco de tiempo en los 7 centros de apoyo a las familias que tenemos en el Ayuntamiento de Madrid, y es intercambio de servicios. Lo coordina un trabajador social y bueno, pues es intercambio de servicios entre los socios y miembros de los bancos de tiempo. Con el tema del arte supongo que es posible, que es muy bonito, es una idea preciosa, pero no sé cómo puede funcionar. Vamos, que sí, que no conozco el. No,
por ejemplo, tenemos una actividad en la tienda, me pongo de pie, mejor, para tener como un poco como la comparación con Arco. Tenemos una galería, también el Time Bank, en donde los artistas producen obras de arte y lo valoran con el tiempo que se ha tomado haciendo el dibujo o la escultura. Entonces ahí pues nace una discusión muy interesante, porque igual un artista que ya está 20 años en el mercado puede cotizar su obra de arte en un montón de euros, pero tarda 8 horas y una persona que acaba de salir de Bellas Artes y dibuja muy bien, pero en euros no es tan valorada su obra de arte, pero tarda 24 horas en su obra de arte. Pues en nuestra galería así lo ofrecemos. Entonces, no solo es práctico, pero nacen un montón de debates sobre el valor del arte. Y tú también conocías algo de Banco de Tiempo, ¿no?
Sobre todo por el tema del intercambio. Es muy potente, es una idea muy potente que hay que desarrollar a todos los niveles, cultural, social. Pues, alguien te puede. Yo lo veo, por ejemplo, ya lo estoy viviendo en un pueblo. Entonces ahí es como estás muy aislado. Pero en realidad tienes mucha capacidad de producir. Cosas que allí no tienen salida, ¿no? Pero en cambio, con todas las herramientas que tenemos, internet, todo esto, esto habría que potenciarlo hasta el máximo. Yo pienso que es una muy buena idea y habría que concienciar a todo el mundo, a todos los niveles. Porque es algo muy, yo creo que es de lo más humano que estoy viendo desarrollar en nuestra sociedad ahora. Es muy, muy, muy fuerte.
Dime. No me ha quedado claro, es decir, no he entendido bien lo que dices de que el artista valora, o sea, la unidad de intercambio es el tiempo que tarda el artista en producir una determinada obra, ¿no? Y se intercambia por otra producción artística.
No, se intercambia por tiempo, por nuestras monedas. Esto es nuestro dinero. Y entonces, por ejemplo, si has estado trabajando arreglando la bici de Corina 2 horas, puedes comprar una obra de arte. Entonces, sí, y aumenta también como la capacidad para artistas de mover, bueno, de ver sus obras en diferentes partes, pero de arreglar también su oficio, de tener una página web o también fortalecer su red profesional, porque conoces también a muchísima gente que igual si solo estás en el taller y estás esperando hasta que alguien te compre la obra, no tienes esa red. ¿Tenéis alguna pregunta?
Una de las cosas que me preocuparía es simplemente el valor que estamos hablando de el artista poniendo el valor a la obra por el tiempo que está empleando en hacer esa obra. Yo creo que es un valor erróneo. Creo que el artista no solamente debe poner valor en su obra simplemente por el tiempo que ha tomado en hacer esa específica obra, porque eso sería, en mi opinión, totalmente erróneo. Una obra de arte no vale lo que uno tarda en hacerla. Yo creo que a nivel literal, creo que el valor, lógicamente, como vemos en esta feria y en muchas otras ferias en el mercado del arte en general, no solamente en Arco, sino fuera de la feria, es otro, no es simplemente he tardado 8 horas en hacer este dibujo, con lo cual 8 horas equivalen a, no sé, también el valor en que tu obra vale, cómo se define ese valor.
También hay que decir que es un sistema económico paralelo. Entonces, cada artista, cada abogado, cada pintor de casas puede elegir si, bueno, quiero vender esta obra por euros o por horas. Y es un interesante niche, ¿no? que hay ahí. También se puede pensar, pues, hay artistas que dicen, yo soy artista 24 horas al día, entonces mi obra no la puedo valorar. Simplemente el debate que surge es interesante para nosotros. Y también nos gusta el debate de decir, bueno, la hora de un artista, de un abogado, de un médico, es igual de todos, somos todos humanos y todo el tiempo vale igual. ¿Alguna otra pregunta?
En relación con lo que acaba de comentar ella, ¿se puede valorar una producción por más tiempo del empleado en hacerla? Quiero decir, si yo soy un artista de reconocido prestigio, he tardado media hora en hacer algo y puedo decir, no, esto vale 10 horas.
nosotros somos la plataforma. Luego los intercambios se hacen entre dos personas y ellos se tienen que poner de acuerdo. Entonces, nosotros no somos tan estrictos. Bueno, tiene que ser exactamente. Queremos también que la idea va fluyendo, que se vaya a hacer sola, que lo hagan las personas. Entonces, no hay reglas, se puede hacer.
¿Cómo, o sea, vosotros quiénes sois? ¿Cómo contactan las personas para que quieren intercambiar?
Sí, es una pregunta muy práctica. Como veíais antes en el vídeo, hay una página web de eFlux. También hay folletos ahí sobre el Time Bank, cómo inscribirse. Es una red internacional. Entras en la página, haces un perfil y pones los servicios que puedes ofrecer y los que necesitas. Y luego pones anuncios, yo necesito un carpintero, 5 horas para construir un banco. Y esa persona viene y tú le pagas. Y así va rulando. Y estamos, como dijo Agno antes, en Nueva York, estamos en Varsovia, Berlín, Frankfurt y Den Haag, Holanda. ¿Cuál más? Ah, sí, la semana pasada abrió una sede también en Bélgica.
Insistir un poco que esto es el camino paralelo, o sea, olvídate del dinero, olvídate del mercado, porque esto es otra cosa.
Sí, es también, por ejemplo, los Transition Towns, son gente que se está preparando para ese cambio. Y este sistema paralelo va un poco también en ese camino. Es una alternativa muy necesaria en este momento para prepararnos. Bueno, otra cosa, como en Madrid. Bueno, como vemos, ¿cómo te llamas? Perdón. Charo trabaja en un banco de tiempo aquí en Madrid, que el ayuntamiento tiene 7 bancos de tiempo en la ciudad, están en diferentes barrios de Madrid. Luego el movimiento 15M también ha ayudado para surgir otros bancos de tiempos iniciados por iniciativas, bueno, de las personas mismas. Y en total creo que hay 288 bancos de tiempo en España mismo. ¿Alguna pregunta más?
Thank you very much, Sara, for helping me out. I would like to finish off with one quote. I hope some of you have learned a little bit about the institution that we run, STRO. And I hope we have been able to explain a little bit about why we do the projects that we do. And I think it's nice to finish off with a quote. It's not so much, our actions are not so much about art, but I think our program and our actions are through art. We use the qualities and the specific qualities of art to make our program. But this also involves another position of the institution. And I would like to finish with a quote by Anthony Huberman, who is the director of the Artist Institute in New York, and who wrote an essay in a very nice book which is called Circular Facts. And he says that smaller institutions like the ones that are being presented here, they don't differ from museums in what they do, they don't differ from museums in what they present, but they differ in how they do this. And he introduces the word caring instead of curating and knowing. This text is also called I Care. And I would like to finish with this quote. which is about the position of the institution. He says, traditionally, curators open their shows and play the role of explicators, working to enlighten visitors who don't know what they know. They are expert performers of the I know and avoid displaying any sign of the I don't know. Instead, an alternative curatorial behavior, so the new one that he proposes, could be to embrace a more vulnerable relationship to knowledge. An institution could stop behaving like an explanation machine and invest in a situation where those who know something engage with those who know something else. It's not about preparing explanations in advance, but about following the life of an idea in public together with others. If an institution goes from knowing to caring, it could point to the affective relationship that ties people to ideas and become a place for attachment rather than consumption. After all, the ideas that make us curious are not the ones we fully understand, but the ones we care about. I love it is always more compelling than I get it. Thank you for your time.